Deepak Chopra, Wellness Radio, Sirius XM Stars, Sirius 102, and XM 155.
Deepak Chopra, and this is Wellness Radio on the Sirius XM Stars channel, Sirius 102 and XM 155. On this program, we talk about spirituality, relationships, love, success, health and well-being. Our favorite topic always is consciousness. And it's my great privilege today to have some very special guests. They're on the phone now from Sweden. Who hasn't heard of the great recording artist Tina Turner? But with her, our special guests, Dacian and Regula. And we'll be introducing them properly to you in a second. But first, I want to just go a little bit into the background. Of course, everyone in the world knows who Tina Turner is. But she has a new album coming out in September. It's called Beyond. And I have listened to parts of it. It's just something that strikes a great resonance with me and my heart. And I feel that more people should be listening to this kind of music and feel the transformation that occurs so spontaneously. In 1993, Tina's autobiography, I, Tina, was made into a feature film, which many of you may have seen, called What's Love Got to Do With It? The movie's closing scenes captured Tina chanting Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, the Lotus Sutra mantra that she has practiced for more than 30 years and which she credits with transforming her life. This is the first time, quote unquote, that people heard me actually say the words Nam Myoho Renge Kyo in this respect, says Tina. In the movie, I was there chanting, but the sound and all of it is stronger now. I'm very proud to be a part of this project, and I hope the whole world will hear it. It will hear a prayer that brought me this far and brought me to being a very happy person. The meaning of the Lotus Sutra is, I devote my life to the mystic law of the Lotus Sutra. It is the royal sutra of a form of Buddhism called Nichiren Buddhism, which started in Japan in 1253. And about this mantra, Tina says, however you must do it, to truly understand, you have to do it. When you say Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, it will slowly remove all of the bad decisions you have made. The more you repeat the words, the more you make your life cleaner. The more you chant it, the closer you get to your true nature. Your true nature is the right way of thinking and the right way of acting. What we call spontaneous right thought and spontaneous right action, which is evolutionary. I'm just paraphrasing now. The longer you go on this path, the more you avoid making wrong decisions. So, Tina, congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining the show.
It's a real pleasure.
And just want to remind our audiences that if you miss parts of it, you can come back to it right through Sunday. And we are worldwide, and you can also hear us on your iPhone application. Tell us about how you came to do this project. And I also want to thank you for acknowledging me in your album, which is very flattering and very gratifying.
Well, actually, one small correction is it's not from, it's from Switzerland.
Yes.
The it was originated from a lady in Switzerland.
Oh, the project.
She is something that she had on her tongue from the first time I met her right up until she invited me do the project with her.
Okay.
There was a lady, her name is Dacian.
Yes.
And she is also a Buddhist. She's actually, she's Tibetan, and she has a career of her own. She was also a part of this project before me. So three women got together and we were very excited
from
about doing it.
She's from a Benedictine monastery. Is that true?
Sorry?
Who's from the Benedictine Monastery.
That's Miss Corti, Regula Corti.
Okay, so yes. they're all with you at the moment, and they're all on the album as well.
Yes. Actually, the project belongs to Miss Corti. She started the whole project and invited me to do it. I joined because it's been something that's kind of been around me for my entire life. And I felt, well, since I'm moving out of my career, it would be a good project to do. And so far, it has done wonderfully well in Switzerland. Everyone has been complimenting her and me on the project. They have the music. They actually say when they're driving to work in the mornings, they listen to it, and it touches them some kind of way. It calms them. This is the feedback we're getting from Switzerland, and we're very happy about it.
Well, I think you should get a great reception in the United States as well. Your household name here, and everybody at our radio station is thrilled to have you on the show today. So you've sent me about four clips, and I'd like to just play the first one right now.
All right.
It's called Prayer, a clip from track 4, interlude 1 for us now. Okay. Let's play it.
All right.
Love grows when you trust. When you trust, love heals and renews. Love makes us feel safe and brings us closer to God. Keep singing. Singing takes you beyond. 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 Beyond.
That's beautiful, Tina.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it's true, isn't it? The love makes us feel safe. Love brings us closer to God. And love is the ultimate truth at the heart of the universe, at the heart of creation. It holds everything together. It's the force of spirit. So you've been practicing Buddhist for quite some time.
Oh, nearly 35 years, yes. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's. I think the public is searching for this kind of music, this kind of message at the moment. And this is why we felt that it was a perfect time for it, with the world being as is.
Yes.
And it is true. It's a time when money can't solve the problem, mm-hmm. when drugs or alcohol can't solve the problem, where you need to go within. And we think that is why the singing and the words is what's making this project as successful as it is.
Yeah, you know, after the show is finished at some point today, I'm going to send you a little piece that I wrote for Oprah. It's about my own experiences at a Buddhist monastery. I spent 3 weeks and ordained as a monk in Thailand. I had to shave my head, even my eyebrows. I went begging every day for my food.
Wow.
Slept on a hardwood floor.
Ooh.
But slept.
And what did you experience?
Well, you know, what I experienced was present moment awareness, as I've never experienced before. And before I left, you know, the abbot said to me some things that I'll never forget. He said, the most important time in your life is now. The most important person in your life is the one you're with now. The most important activity in your life is what you're doing now. The most important way to make a future is the choices you make now.
Wow.
And the most important and best way to be happy is to make somebody else happy
right
now. And I realized that after 60 books, this is all I needed to know.
That's right. But you see, sometimes it comes in a hard way, and
yes,
then sometimes it comes just the pop of a finger. So
that's right.
And it really, it's a good information, and you feel so good when you have just those few words.
Yes.
And it helps you to know that you're on the right track.
Right. Let's bring your collaborators on
yes
the phone. So
all right.
Would you introduce them?
Okay. The first one is the founder of our little project. She is Regula Corti.
Regula, welcome to our show.
Hello. I'm very happy to be
yeah
online with you, Deepak.
Yes, it's wonderful to have you on the Sirius XM. So just give us a little bit of background and how this project came to be.
Yes. I'm a singer and musician and a music therapist, and working a long time, you know, in a spiritual field, having teachers like Thich Nhat Hanh. And actually, you are, and you don't know, a teacher of mine, because I really read all the books you ever wrote, probably.
You're very kind.
And a very nice coincidence is that when I read the third Jesus you wrote,
uh-huh.
I could so deeply connect to the Jesus energy. And that moment I knew that when my project was like already in the final stage, that I have to contact Tina. And that was because of your book, actually.
You're very kind. You're very
yes.
kind.
So the project is started, you know, it's a long, long history. I could write almost a book about it. But Dejen, the Buddhist singer, and I, we met on a very deep level by singing prayers together on various occasions. We once sang for a Palestinian and a Jewish reunion in Switzerland for peace finding and helping people to get more tolerance and more respect for each other's. And it was a very difficult meeting, and anytime they were like out of the discussion and getting angry or uncomfortable, we were singing our prayers, and it helped them to get into it. And that was wonderful, a wonderful experience. And they said, where is the CD? So we started the CD.
How wonderful. I'm speaking to Regula Kirti, and she has worked with Buddhist and Hindu prayers, also in the tradition of the Sikhs. And she was recently inspired to sing and teach Christian prayers as well. This is her third album. And she says, for me, the realization of beyond is a dream come true, inspired by my students, patients, and colleagues. I feel this project will serve as a shining reminder of the Earth's heart ability to heal and to connect in gratitude to all those who contributed to this project. All artist proceeds from the recording will go towards supporting three non-profit organizations that are affiliated with the artists, with the focus on the welfare of children. And the album is published by New Earth Records, which was founded by Bhikkhu Schober and Waduda Paradiso in 1990 in Munich. The album will be released in November, I believe, in the United States. So I'm going to now ask our producer here to play the second track that we have, the second 30 track. It's from the compilation. And here we go. That's very evocative, something that I have heard before, and every time I do hear it, I feel that's settling in my consciousness as well. And you have a third person collaborating in your album, Dejen, I believe, who's a native Tibetan mantra singer. She's the eldest daughter of the late Yishi Sedon Zatul, much respected Tibetan Lama Dangse Tulku Rinpoche, author of the book Practice of Tibetan Meditation. And your Dejen's family fled to India in 1959, escaping the Chinese occupation of Tibet, settling in Switzerland in 1963. Since 2005, Dejen has released four CDs with New Earth Records. She has traveled and performed intensely all over the world and has been invited by His Holiness the Dalai Lama to sing at many of his events. His Holiness appointed her an ambassador of peace for the Tibetan people. Quote unquote, the many cultures and religions of the world offer a variety of paths to inner quiet and peace. For us Tibetans, reciting or singing mantras is one of the most effective ways of quickly producing a peaceful state of mind. The mantras play a very important role in Buddhist practice, and they are an integral part for the practitioner on his spiritual path. Can we have Deshan join us, please?
Yes, hello, Deepak. I'm online with you.
Yes, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm extremely happy. So excited to be online with you because in one of your books you speak about synchronicity.
That's
and
right.
How much we are all connected with each other. And if we have a dream and we really think about it strongly, it can all happen. And probably, when Tina contacted you for Beyond, we must have all been really connecting with each other so strongly so that
yes.
We sit on the phone.
No, I remember Tina's visit to... I remember Tina's visit to California. I was overjoyed that she was doing this project with you. And of course, you've been performing worldwide. And I personally also have a close association with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. He comes to Vancouver once a year and we do a whole conference on the science of Buddhist philosophy, our interconnectedness, the nature of impermanence, but also how getting to that level of what Thich Nhat Hanh calls interbeingness, you know, allows us to relate to each other and brings out divine qualities like loving kindness, compassion, joy at the success of others, peace and equanimity. So it's a great thing that you brought this chanting of mantras to the world, and that I think you're going to have a major impact on people who listen to it.
Thank you very much.
What is your hope for this album? How did you meet Tina, by the way?
Well, to me, as a Tibetan, you can imagine, I came to Switzerland as a small refugee child of 3 years old. Mm. And this whole thing is like a fairy tale, of course, you know, a little refugee child getting to sing with the world's most famous icon.
Yeah, that's true. She's a very big icon,
yes.
Not only in the world, but particularly here in the United States. Everybody in our studio is thrilled to have her. And you.
Thank you. No, I feel extremely happy and lucky. I got in this project through Regula, of course, because Regula had been listening to my very first album, Devache, The Universal Healing Power of Mantras, and she was practicing these mantras with her students, and she was thinking that I must be living somewhere up in the Himalayas when one day she found out that I actually just live across the lake. Because we have the Lake of Zurich in between us. And
synchronicity
so
once again.
Yes, absolutely. And so close. And so we connected with each other, and it was an amazing connection. And that's how it all started.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I think I'd like to play the third clip that you sent me, the chanting intro, The Sound of Mystic Law with Tina Turner. So, and let's play that and then come right back.
Thank you.
Nam myo renge kyo, nam myo renge kyo, nam myo renge kyo. Myoho renge kyo hobe porani.
So that was just a little glimpse or a little track in chanting intro from Tina Turner's new album called Beyond. Actually, it's a project with Tina Turner, Dejan Shak Dagse, and Regula Kirti. Dejan, what is your hope? What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, there is one very worldly hope, actually, right now, because New Earth Records has submitted Beyond for the Grammys into the category of New Age. And, of course, to be very honest, we hope that we're going to get it, and it will be such a beautiful breakthrough of a message that really needs to be spread through the world. And of course, overall, the hope for Beyond is that we can spread happiness and joy throughout the world to the people, to give them a tool how to become, how to transform their mind if they're stuck with fears and sorrows, and to give them a tool how to see the world in a different way, and to really get into the spirit of Beyond.
So I'm speaking to Dejin, whose recordings of Tibetan chants were known at the Benedictine Monastery in Ain Sedin, which was how Regula learned about them. And this led to a fascinating friendship between the two women, and then to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and ultimately this collaboration with Tina Turner, which is called Beyond, issued by New Earth Records. Beyond is also Tina Turner's first spiritual recording. In explaining her participation in Beyond, Tina, who contributed both spoken interludes and chanting, says she turned to Buddhism, quote-unquote, in my bad times. When I needed help, I started the practice, and I was motivated because the practice worked for me, and I've continued to do it because up until now it has supported me, and that's the motivation. When something works, I will spread this word to everyone, because that is part of what Buddhism is to pass it on in order to help people to help themselves. Quote again, with the Beyond Project, I'm glad to add my personal chants as an offering to the world to share a message of oneness through music and prayer that goes beyond religious differences and helps bring humanity together. In Beyond, her inner strength and power of her convictions is almost palpable. According to Waduda Paradiso, co-founder of New Earth Records, Tina is not just a singer, she's a shamanic force. Her message of oneness, her call to overcome our fears, listen to each other and sing, are an invitation to go beyond. And in their notes on the recording, Regula and Dejin write of experiencing, quote-unquote, the immense power of deep spirituality whenever we chant together, although each person is praying in his own tradition. With the CD Beyond, we wish to share our wonderful experience of connecting hearts and this great sense of oneness with as many people as possible. Singing takes you beyond to a place where love and compassion grow. In a personal message, His Holiness the Dalai Lama writes, bringing together corresponding pieces from Christian and Tibetan Buddhist traditions, as has been done here, will allow listeners to share in these prayers, stirring thoughts of deeper respect and peace in their lives. So I really want to congratulate all of you on this wonderful project. Tina, can you...
Yes.
Really thank you also for joining us in this segment. And before I play the last track, I'd like to ask you, when are you next visiting the United States?
Well, I don't have a schedule on a plan for that at the moment. I'm sure we will get some kind of feedback or invitations on this project. So, but when I'm there, I'm sure I'll find time to pop in and see you again.
If you do find time to pop in, I'd love to have you live in the studio for a conversation, and it'll be a great privilege to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. They're all smiling with big beaming eyes at
okay.
the moment. So.
Well, thank you. So we are connected and we'll stay connected.
Yes.
And I'll let you go. Have a wonderful time in Switzerland. And next time I'm there, I'll be surely be in touch with you. And I'll send you my little essay about my experiences at the monastery as
Please
an ordained
do.
Monk.
Yes, absolutely. So I'd love to see that and to hear how it all went for you.
We're going to play the fourth track now. And thank you again, Tina. And thank you, Deshan. So that was wonderful to have these great artists, and Tina Turner was an old friend, and I met her recently when she visited the Chopra Center in San Diego with their message of interconnectedness, interbeingness, love, compassion, as those aspects, those divine qualities that bring about the healing of our souls and the healing of our bodies and the healing of our society. When we come back, we're going to have a very interesting doctor, scientist, clinical professor in the Department of Neurosurgery at Stanford University, talking about the science behind the experience of compassion.
Deepak Chopra, Wellness Radio, Sirius XM Stars, Sirius 102, and XM 155.
I'm Deepak Chopra, and this is Wellness Radio on the Sirius XM Stars channel, Sirius 102, XM 155. As you know, we are going worldwide. We are repeat the program every 2 hours till Sunday morning. If you have an iPhone application, you can hear this program on your iPhone as well. I have a very special guest who's joining me now, Dr. James Doty, who's the director and founder of the Compassion Clinic Project at Stanford University. He's clinical professor of neurosurgery at Stanford University. He completed his training at the University of California, Irvine, and his medical school at Tulane University School of Medicine in New Orleans. In addition to being a neurosurgeon, he's an inventor, an entrepreneur, a philanthropist. He's given support to a number of charitable organizations, including Children as the Peacemakers, Global Healing and Family and Children Services. These charities support a variety of programs throughout the world, including those of HIV/AIDS support, blood banks, medical care in third world countries, and peace initiatives. Additionally, he has endowed chairs at major universities, including Stanford University School of Medicine and his alma mater, Tulane University School of Medicine. As founder of Project Compassion, Dr. Doty works with both the Stanford Institute of Neuroinnovation and Translational Neuroscience and a variety of scientists from a number of disciplines examining the neural basis for compassion and altruism. He's on the board of directors of a number of nonprofit foundations, including the University of Southern California Brain and Creativity Institute, the Dalai Lama Foundation, and the Friends of New Orleans. Dr. Doty, it's a great privilege to have you, sir.
Well, thank you for having me, Deepak. That was a very generous introduction, and I appreciate you having me on your show today.
Well, I'm particularly interested in what you're doing for several reasons. My own background is that, you know, after I finished my residency in internal medicine, I went on to do endocrinology and neuroendocrinology, and this was in the 70s when we were first identifying what me and my colleague Candice Pert later started to call the molecules of emotion. So we were seeing a connection between what happens in our consciousness and what happens in our biology. At that time, nobody else was actually talking about this, and we were actually criticized and often attacked by mainstream medicine as being totally out there. So for me, the work you're doing is really wonderful because, you know, we were just projecting at that time or hypothesizing, but you are using scientific methods and rigorous scientific methods to define the neural basis for compassion and altruistic behavior. Tell us a little bit about your background, sir, and how you got involved in this research.
Well, it actually goes back to growing up. As a child, I grew up in poverty, and my father was an alcoholic, and my mother was an invalid, and that gave me the opportunity to intersect with a number of social institutions as well as charities. And it always fascinated me, even as a child, seeing people who have great capacity, either in the context of power, position, money, who, by that being in that situation, could have an incredible positive impact on individuals who were less fortunate than them, but chose not to. And then you look at people who had very, very little and who would give everything to help someone. And that paradox always stuck in my mind. And as I went on in my career, and I was very fortunate to have mentors and individuals who had a very positive influence on my life. But as I went forward, I actually got into a position where I went off and did entrepreneurial activities, which ended up being extraordinarily successful. And I realized after attaining all this wealth and, if you will, status, that it wasn't actually giving me what I wanted, and it also though gave me some insights into looking at this situation of what can make someone happy, and brought me back to these first ideas I had about what it is that motivates people to do good, if you will. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, I ended up losing everything and effectively being bankrupt.
No, really?
Yes.
This is before your medical training, or when was this?
No, what happened was I actually had completed my training and had gone off and done some entrepreneurial activities, extraordinarily successful, made tens of millions of dollars. And then, as this was, I was in Silicon Valley, of course, which is where Stanford is. And as a result, during the dot-com boom, I was involved in some of those activities. And I just naively assumed, boy, this is easy and it'll go on. And it didn't. And I lost everything. But I had made certain commitments to charity. And I wanted to live up to those, so the only asset I had left actually was stock in a company that I had run that eventually went public, and I decided to give all of that stock away, and when the company went public, that amounted to about $30 million.
Wow.
But the point of the story isn't so much that I gave it away. The point is, though, that when you grow up in poverty, you think that you want control and money, and you think that's going to make you happy. And the exercise here was that I essentially gave the thing that I thought I wanted most away and have found that that has actually made me happier than anything, and that has gone to serve a lot of other people. But one of the projects I decided to explore was this continued interest in compassion and altruism. And I had returned back to Stanford, and I just started having informal discussions with scientists. And it was interesting because His Holiness the Dalai Lama had visited Stanford back in 2005 to talk about craving and addiction. And I thought, wow, as part of this exploration of mine, wouldn't it be wonderful to get His Holiness to come back to Stanford to talk about compassion? And as I started having more discussions, it was interesting because some scientists had said, well, geez, this area really, it's not appropriate for His Holiness to come back. He's not a scientist. This area of research endeavor, it's really not real scientists, and I'm sure, or real science, and I'm sure, as you know from your own path here, you get this ridicule when you start bringing up things that people really haven't explored or that are not mainstream. But I was fortunately in a position where I chose to proceed, and this ultimately led to an introduction to His Holiness, and I had a conversation with him to come back to Stanford to talk about some of the work that I had just embarked on with some of my colleagues and fellow scientists at Stanford. And it was amazing because he immediately agreed to do so.
I'm Deepak Chopra. You're listening to Wellness Radio on Sirius XM Stars, Sirius 102 and XM 155. And my guest right now is James R. Doty, MD. Dr. Doty is the director and founder of Project Compassion at Stanford University, a clinical professor in the Department of Neurosurgery at Stanford University. Go ahead, Dr. Doty.
Well, so you can imagine, His Holiness immediately agreed to come to Stanford, and I expected, he called for his secretary, and I expected him to come out with, you know, his laptop to sort of pick out dates, and it was sort of amusing because he came out with this giant ledger that he slowly opened up and started turning page by page, and I was sort of laughing to myself. But His Holiness picked a date, and then he and I started a dialogue just about what his interests were, and as you know, he has a great interest actually in neuroscience.
Yes.
And he started talking about the importance of teaching compassion to youth and in the context of education. Well, our conversation wound down, and at the end of it, His Holiness began an animated conversation with his translator. And at the end of it, his translator said to me, he said, Jim, you know, His Holiness so believes in what you're doing, he wants to make a personal donation to this work. And
it turned out
to be the largest donation he has made to a non-Tibetan cause ever. And you can imagine how humbling and extraordinary that was.
Of course.
But this ultimately led to not only my personal validation for this path, but it led to other individuals to become benefactors, and this really started the formalization of the center. And now we have 9 studies going on that cross multiple disciplines that include the development, actually, of a compassion training protocol, mm-hmm. at which I believe will ultimately be as valuable as what we have seen with mindfulness-based stress reduction.
Okay. Can you give me a little bit of idea what this compassion training entails?
Well, it is based on contemplative practice, mm-hmm. primarily a Tibetan Buddhist compassion meditation practice. Mm-hmm. And we have secularized it, mm-hmm. and such that, number one, it doesn't have any religious overtones. And number two, it is such that it can be scientifically studied. But basically, it is an eight-week course that we give that is about 2 hours a week with 20 to 30 minutes of meditation each day. Mm-hmm. And it basically goes through the different aspects of compassion. And as you know, part of compassion, number one, is being not only compassionate to others, but having self-compassion, mm-hmm. and releasing these burdens that an individual has that restrain them. But it is also starting at a place, looking at those who you love the most, and extending that sense of caring and love to those outside that close family unit, if you will, such that you're looking at everyone ultimately as someone who is close to you. And essentially what it does is it creates a sense of oneness, if you will. And when you have that feeling for other people, you find that it is hard to be angry at others. And in fact, you look at others in the best sense, if you will. And that in and of itself, as we have seen with different studies on different types of compassion training, results in a decrease in cortisol level, increase in DHEA, and many of the factors that are associated with stress and have the negative aspects of which stress causes, mm-hmm. Are diminished. And I would suggest to you that ultimately being a more compassionate individual actually leads to ultimate happiness.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, over the last 30, 40 years, there's been a lot of research, obviously, on stress and how it's linked to the major epidemics of our time, whether it is compromised immune systems or cardiovascular disease or addictive behavior. But only recently have scientists like yourself leading the way and being pioneers have said, you know, we need to go beyond looking at just stress. We need to see what positive emotions like love, compassion, kindness, joy, equanimity, what the Buddhists call divine attitudes, can do to our biology. And, you know, I've been reading up some of the stuff that's been coming out, and it's remarkable to me that you can not only show changes chemically like DHEA levels, but in fact, they're very distinct EEG changes. And it has been suggested that even the size of the brain in certain parts of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, increases. That, you know, it's setting a new paradigm for what everybody's calling neuroplasticity, and a new understanding of the fact that our brain, the structure of the brain is dependent on how we as conscious sentient beings use it.
No, I think that's exactly right. And what's sort of amusing here, and which should bring humility to scientists, is the fact that these are techniques that have been known for 25 years or 2,500 years. Isn't that amazing?
Right.
That we are now going backwards, if you will, to understand the techniques that contemplatives have known for millennia, mm-hmm. that by having focus, attention, concentration, repetition, you can change your brain. It's interesting when you think about Malcolm Gladwell's book, where he talks about certain types of training to become an expert athlete, that it's more in terms of how often you do it, mm-hmm. and not necessarily innate skill. Mm-hmm. And the amazing thing here is that each of us has the capacity to change our brain and to develop or cultivate these positive emotions. the work I'm doing and my colleagues are doing isn't simply to find out interesting research results. What we really want to do is to find the key or a variety of keys that open the door that will allow each of us to lead fuller, better lives. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's through compassion and service to others. Mm-hmm. You know, I give an example sometimes when I talk about, and this shows you really quickly how transformation can occur. Mm-hmm. All of us at some point in our lives have very much desired or wanted something, and whether it was appropriate or not isn't relevant. The fact of the matter is there was something that each of us wanted that we did not think we were going to get, and time was running out, and it felt at that point so, so important that you get this. And as the time runs out, you start sitting there saying, geez, maybe I'm not worthy. You become hopeless. You start having despair. You may have anger. And you start believing that there is no God, that mm-hmm. God is not pleased with you. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting there, and this is an extraordinarily isolated position. Mm-hmm. Then when you think about, though, the immediate transformation when somebody reaches out and, if you will, saves you, mm-hmm. to changing the way you think from that point of absolute despair to immediate hopefulness and the recognition of the positive nature of humanity. Mm-hmm. And it is that transformative experience that all of us have the ability to have with us every day, to be look at the world in this positive way. You know, I tell people that think about the time when you've seen somebody in that desperate situation or in need where you have actually reached out and done something for them that at that moment dramatically changed the situation, and think about how good it felt to you, the feelings that you had when you did that, and how long they lasted with you. And I submit that that is really true happiness, mm-hmm. when you reach out to others and you recognize that each of us is suffering and you do an act to intervene to relieve that suffering.
It's beautifully said. You know, Dr. Doty, I was recently, and I'll send you a description of my experiences, but recently I took a few weeks off and ordained as a Buddhist monk, not for religious reasons, but just to go through the experience in Thailand. So we were we would meditate from midnight to about 4 a.m. on loving kindness, compassion, joy at the success of others, equanimity, impermanence, and our own death. And then we would go from 6 a.m. to on our what were called alms rounds, where we would go to the streets or villages to get our food. And we ate once a day, and then the rest of the day was in mindful practice. And then we started the routine again. I had to sleep on the floor with no mattresses, no pillows. And I can tell you, I have been never so happy. And it was an extraordinary experience also, because I slept, the few hours that I slept were the best kind of sleep I had in my whole life. And when I left, the abbot kind of summarized the experience in 5 sentences. And I've written several books looking at the science and the mind-body-spirit connection. And the abbot said, I want you to go with the following insights. Number one, the best time in your life is now. Number two, the most important person in your life is the one who's in front of you now. Number three, the most important activity in your life is what you're doing now. Number four, the best way to create a future is what you're doing now. Are the choices you're making mindfully now. And 5, the best way to be happy is to make someone else happy now. And, you know, I left there with the song in my heart and saying, you know, that's all we need, really, that the whole basis of Buddhism, which isn't really a religion anyway, is the idea of interbeingness, that the fact that there is no such thing as a separate self, that all our experience of suffering indeed comes from the socially induced hallucination that there is a separate self, And then the deeper domain, we are all inhaling the same atmosphere as our breath. We are the same energy field. We are the same physical body because we're recycling the same stuff. And perhaps we are one consciousness. And it's so practical.
No, that's exactly right. His Holiness says, if you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. And I think that really says it all. When you mention that Buddhism isn't a religion, mm-hmm. that's certainly correct. And I don't think you have to be religious. In fact, His Holiness again has said, my religion is kindness.
Yes.
That's really all you need to know. The fascinating thing, though, and it came to my mind when you mentioned that experience was, it is extraordinary, is it not, that we have in Western society an epidemic of depression and all of these negative emotions. And then you go to a third world country where people have very, very little, and yet they are extraordinarily happy. And you look at the work of a number of these researchers who are studying happiness, and the fact of the matter is, it is not the attainment of or the acquisition of wealth that makes you happy. Mm-hmm. It is having relationships. It is having your family secure. It is having a roof over your head. It is having adequate food. Beyond that, your level of happiness does not dramatically increase. And we have, unfortunately, all these people from these third world countries striving to come to the West or
especially
experience.
In India these days. It's terrible, yeah.
And then what do they get? They don't get happy. They get stress and all the negative aspects associated with the Western lifestyle. Then now we're having a movement by Westerners to look at the practices of the East, which promote the values of which we were just talking about. And it really is extraordinary what little it takes to actually be happy and the hollowness that people feel inside themselves, and they try filling it with things that are never going to fill it.
That's right. And actually, if you look at all the world problems right now, whether it's a war, terrorism, ecological imbalance, radical poverty, they all come from this not having this deep connectivity that is already there, but we have lost our memory of it.
No, and I think that what is happening and what we're finding, and I think what you have been a pioneer in leading, is this movement to get back there. You know, people talk about this conflict between science and religion. Mm-hmm. I think we're just talking about two separate things, but they don't have to be in disharmony. I think we can use the knowledge that we have today to better understand those aspects of religious practice which make one happy.
Right.
And, it really is extraordinary that fundamentally at the root of our humanity and at the root of essentially every religious movement that there is a recognition of the importance of compassion, mm-hmm. which is opening your heart to others. Mm-hmm. Isn't it extraordinary that in our society today, you can be in a work in a cubicle next to another person for years
and not
never
talk
know
to them.
Anything about them.
Yeah.
And this is the fundamental problem here. You know, when we evolved from hunter-gatherers in that society, there were a couple aspects that were critically important to our survival. One was you had a task that was important to the society. Mm-hmm. You had a job that was recognized. The other aspect was, though, you could not hide your situation or your suffering from another because the society was too small. And if you were suffering and potentially could not do your job, it would impact negatively on society.
Right.
So people intervened immediately. Hmm. And this is the importance of compassion and why we developed it for our survival. And the sad thing is that we have put up barriers to allow us to communicate with other individuals and also to recognize that they're actually suffering. If we recognize their suffering and embrace their suffering and help them, it opens their heart as well.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, I think, that we don't have enough of in society. I give a talk on care and compassion, and it's sort of fascinating because during this talk, I give patient examples, and I have to be honest with you, I periodically get emotional. My voice will crack, or actually I'll start having a few tears run out of my eyes because these have been very important events in my life. Mm-hmm. People have suffered. People have died. And they have impacted on me personally. Mm-hmm. And it is amazing at the end of this that I've had nurses come up to me or individuals say, you know, as an example, this nurse, she said, in my 35 years of nursing, I have never seen a doctor cry.
Which
can you
is
imagine?
So sad, yeah. Yeah, it is sad. You know, in the name of objectivity, we have really lost our humanity. My very special guest has been Dr. James Doty, director and founder of Project Compassion, Stanford University. He's a clinical professor in the Department of Neurosurgery at Stanford. Dr. Doty, it's been a pleasure to have you, and I would like to have you again. You know, you mentioned 13 different scientific projects. I want to talk about that. I also be getting in touch with you once a year. We have a conference at our institute called Sages and Scientists, where we bring together people such as yourself to make presentations. I'd be very honored if you consider that.
Well, thank you so much for having me today. And, of course, I would be honored to attend the conference, and I look forward to chatting with you in more detail about the work that we're doing at Project Compassion.
It's a deal. We'll have you back, and I'm very grateful that you joined us today.
I'm thinking now I should go for 3 weeks to try being a Buddhist.
Well, I'm going to send you a little write-up, and then you decide. We can go together next time.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Okay.
Well, listen, take care.
Take care.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah,
thank
take
you.
Care. I'm Deepak Chopra. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars.